When it comes to disaster films, Hollywood has left no stone unturned. From earthquakes, fires, and sea monsters to ships, blimps, and airplanes, the disaster film is a tried and true American tradition. No film has been viewed more in recent weeks than Steven Soderbergh's 2011 thriller Contagion. Contagion employs a long list of known Hollywood actors, including Gwyneth Paltrow, Matt Damon, Lawrence Fishburne, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, and many others to tell the story of the deadly outbreak of a highly contagious virus and its eventual defeat. Old mole and retired professor of psychology Jan Hocken rightly jumped on the Contagion bandwagon, seeing an opportunity to provide a psychological reading of the film's themes. This morning, we offer the first in a series of discussions centered around psychology, public health, and the crises we face as the coronavirus pandemic unfolds. Jan, the film Contagion is probably one of the most popular films on Netflix, and I believe it's streaming in other platforms. It is from 2011, and people are devouring it as it is part of our current landscape because the film depicts in detail from the perspective of science and public health what happens when we have a major outbreak and the process behind the scenes and the resulting paranoia, fear, anxiety that happens in the public. And you as a psychologist thought this would be a really fun one for us to review. So it's good that it's being widely viewed and we have some thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think it's different from many Hollywood films about disasters that and insidious threats that are very tied into the paranoid elements of the human psyche. We all have, not just people who are psychotic, but everyday people have tendencies towards paranoia, where something you notice, you attend to it more and it becomes more menacing in your imagination than the threat is in reality. So there's always this task throughout life of assessing threats and the potential for magnifying a threat that really is pretty benign, and that's part of prejudices, it's part of overreactions of various sorts. And I think we're drawn into this film because it begins with what seem to be these very banal, everyday interactions. You know, a woman executive leaves a bar in a hotel, and the camera lingers as she engages in very everyday interactions, swiping her credit card, picking up a few things and leaving. And now we look at those innocent, the quotidian aspects of daily life very differently now because we're looking at the film itself through a different lens. But it is partly at the time about the paranoid, obsessive aspects of human life and how often the paranoid and the obsessive way of being phobic about germs or shunning interaction that in this film, the cautionary tale is they're right. Things are very dangerous out there. Everyday interactions are far more dangerous than we had thought. So the film, though, follows this through also a scientific gaze, follows the pandemic as an impersonal disease, a virus spreading insidiously. But that virus and its transmission through very everyday innocent interactions is itself the main character. I think more than heroes and villains in this story, it's about the spread of a disease and human efforts to confront and contain it that is the main character itself. And, of course, that resonates with what people are trying to figure out now about the pandemic.
And the science is what I think is most compelling. It got great reviews mostly. There's a couple of important critical reviews out there. But for the most part, it was given good reviews. It was well thought of by scientists. As you said, it really does resonate. And it brings around full circle that this is a known entity. This is a known possibility that we as an advanced society must contend with as we become more and more globally connected with one another. On the most basic level, it also says a lot about how we engage
with our own bodies in public space. Hand washing has never been more popular. Then it's also this back door to the world of science, the bureaucracy, the pursuit and interest and dedication, along with a lot of the obstacles and concerns about impacts like economy, hoarding, who gets out, who's protected, who will not be protected. In the film, it doesn't go into a lot of the deeper politics. It really is a very focused on a particular group of people threaded together along with science.
Yeah, and the heroes really are the scientists with the Center for Disease Control and doctors. And I think that is important in this period we live in, as medical providers are in many ways the heroes of this time. So I think that's part of what resonates with people. Many of the lead protagonists are women doctors who are selfless and take enormous risks to protect patients. And there's a lot about vaccine paranoia. The one villain in this is peddling a naturopathic remedy and makes a lot of money off of it. And there's a little side plot about anti-vaccine paranoia that was satisfying for you, in that a lot of the anti-vacciners have done tremendous harm in arguing that routine vaccines in childhood cause autism. And there's been quite a bit of discussion about how irresponsible that is. So I think the politics of vaccine play an important and interesting role. It's more dramatic and misleading in ways that explain public panic in the film. It's different from the coronavirus pandemic because, you know, in the film, the virus becomes lethal very, very quickly. Millions of people are killed very, very quickly and fall over abruptly with seizures. And so, you know, the Hollywood convention of having to see people convulsing, and the first patient number one identified, we see her autopsy as their scalp is pulled back. And so it's a lot of gruesomeness around that. But, you know, in many ways, it's harder to, I guess, create drama in a narrative film around how everyday people are often struggling with more subtle effects, including becoming ill and dying in ways that don't map onto the dramatic deaths that are portrayed in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think how to also dramatize the way in which, for most people in response to a public crisis, looting and fighting and fleeing are not the only or even the main responses. People tend to be fairly cooperative as a kind of instinctual response, come together in groups. Of course, we can't do that now physically, but it's harder, I guess, to make a film about what's inspiring and the possibilities now of the time we're living in. In the Contagion, we also have a denouement resting solely on the rush for a cure and looting and rationing of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the assumption, as it is in disaster films, is that the end, your fears and anxieties are contained by the containing of the threat, and, you know, normal life resumes. But the message of the film is that a crisis arises, smart, helpful people rise to the occasion, find a cure, and then you resume normalcy. And I think crises have arisen historically where the post-epidemic or pandemic or crisis, it was really a different world. You know, after World War I and after World War II, there were profoundly different dynamics to how people thought about the society and the distribution of power. So this Contagion, in that sense, is a conservative story, even though its heroes are true heroes we're feeling now. But in other ways, it's based on this idea of the restoration of a previous state of normalcy.
Right. I agree. And I think that the focus on the heroic government institution would be thought of much differently in circumstances now removed, what, 9-10 years from when the film was made. The ongoing mistrust of pharmaceutical companies play a role in how people understand the worthiness and usefulness or utility of vaccines, whether it's a flu shot or it's your package of vaccines that you do for your kids. There's a whole public discourse around this that is steeped in a lot of really deep mistrust of government and government agencies. Even though I found the storyline with the Jude Law character, who's the guy making all the money on Forsythia, which is it's used in Chinese medicine, I found his storyline a little confusing and somewhat thin, but some of the power dynamics and the economic power that comes from the creation and distribution of these vaccines or any sort of medical care that we need is, you know, even further entrenched in profit, in capitalism.
Yeah, it was not that kind of film.
Yeah,
at
it really
all.
Wasn't.
I mean, it was the everyday human reaching out to touch someone. And, of course, a woman businesswoman having an affair abroad, you know nothing good's going to come of her. Lingering at a bar and having a good time and
yeah.
comes home and dies and kills her son indirectly.
Right.
So her surviving yeah. husband is in the film allowed a very brief moment of mourning and then everybody marches on. But
mm-hmm.
as a cautionary tale about traveling, about reaching out to touch someone, it's hard to critique that kind of thing now. It was described as an example of Steven Soderbergh's own OCD, his obsessive compulsive way of making films and bringing that aesthetic to them,
mm-hmm.
where he's interested in the compulsive, paranoid elements of the human psyche. That doesn't mean he himself suffers from them, but he's interested in the uncertainty of something very threatening that you can't fully protect yourself from, and where paranoia and obsessive tendencies meet the rational, and
mm-hmm.
that fuzzy boundary, which is, of course, what we're experiencing now. We were talking about the human transmission of the virus, but you're also raising a question about the whole economic political system that itself becomes the transmission of a virus, which is part of what we're seeing now, the failure of public health, the hollowing out of our medical system, how flimsy and inadequate any kind of safety net is that we have here. You know,
mm-hmm.
in the film, Gwyneth Paltrow was a wealthy person who died very quickly, and then there are millions of people who die that we don't see represented, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way in which the economics and the public health aspects and the social class aspects of pandemics and who gets ill and dies and who's more or less at risk than others was not part of the story here, but it's certainly
mm-hmm.
part of the story of what we're living.
And the question about immunity and who's immune and who's not immune almost becomes, in our current situation, a metaphor for the immunity that is not afforded to people who are marginal and on the fringe, either in the U.S. or around the world as a result of austerity and, as you said, the hollowing out of our medical systems.
Yeah. In Contagion, there are people who have a natural immunity who don't get sick, and then there's everybody else, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're those with a natural immunity, there's sort of a random mutation they have that protects them from contracting the disease. There's something to that, but vulnerabilities to diseases are far more associated with other known factors around health, around people who are living in situations where they're more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could have been drawn out more in the film versus father of this child and the surviving husband of an unfaithful wife, the businesswoman to boot,
uh-huh.
he's the everyday dad hero, does the dutiful things. But I think we're supposed to identify with him as virtuous because he takes care of his daughter and also with his immunity. Watching the film, a kind of identification with someone who's invulnerable. We never really take the position in any lingering way with people who really get sick and die in this film.
Right.
So Hollywood offers some protective identifications when you watch things that are scary like this, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
I guess it's how much to take from this that is about Hollywood as much as it is about the actual pandemic we are experiencing.
Hollywood is a machine that restores order and normalcy, and we see that in this film. I think the first 20 minutes or 30 minutes I found to be the best part of the film, and it was where Soderbergh does this thing that he does really well, and that is focusing in on these characters. And while it's true that we don't watch people grieve and go through long, protracted periods of grieving, we do have a really interesting look at the Matt Damon character, who is the husband who loses his wife, the patient zero in the film, whose emotional state is very well portrayed, I thought.
Yeah, given
kind
that their
unknowing.
Their relationship was not the central story, and there were none of these relationships were particularly central to the film. Yeah,
no, but it established something that drew me in ways that other parts of the film didn't. And part of that, I suppose, is because it is focusing more centrally on this kind of scientific drive, the lens being the process of identifying and isolating and then trying to figure out what the cure is.
Yeah, and all
said,
hands on deck to do that.
Yeah.
He's on the domestic side with trying to get his daughter to stay home, and I think that part of the film probably resonates with a lot of people.
Right. How do
you
keep your teenager entertained and away from her boyfriend?
So all of that social labor that is not the main part of the film, but you get glimpses, and often it's work assigned to women. And now with the pandemic, I think one of the important dynamics of this terrible situation is how much caregiving work, the work of people who provide dependent care, provide and service jobs of many kinds, many people are aware of how dependent they are on others who serve them. And invisible, what Ivan Illich calls shadow labor, the labor you never see unless it's not done. Well, we're seeing a lot of shadow labor coming up from under the shadows, which is a good thing. And in Contagion, you only get glimpses of that, of all of what's important to do when you have a really a big public health crisis. It's not just doctors and scientists rushing in to solve the problem, which is part of it, but all of the everyday labor and work of people to keep things going.
Absolutely.
Earlier you made this point that much of the mistrust of the government, the mistrust of science and medicine and institutions that we now know we do depend on good science, and I think in recent years the disregard and the abandonment of basic science by the Republicans and the conservatives is horrifying to most of us, and the disregard for medical science. And so a big part of the crisis we're in now is related to ignoring science and ignoring public health and the many people who work in our government and through agencies who've kept things going, including during government shutdowns, during the hollowing out of so many government services. And yet a lot of us who have histories of critiquing science and struggles within science and critiquing experts, you know, it's tricky business, you know, how you go after the pharmaceutical companies and on what grounds, how you go after different farming practices, which science you draw on. And I think there is also in the left an unhelpful paranoia about science and conspiratorial tendencies that we need to be really careful about. At the same time, films like this champion science in a way that is oversimplified.
Right. I agree with that. And because we have an economic interest in both science and medicine that is unhealthy and unhelpful to the public good, how do we have those conversations?
Yeah.
Jan, thanks for joining me this morning. And we will be continuing to look at Hollywood, even as Hollywood itself is shut down. The magic of streaming will allow us to continue our discussions on the portrayal of these kinds of crises in the media and their impacts both psychologically and in other ways.